RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Thursday is Money Talks Day here at RCR, where we try and join the money dots with the help of Farzan Arani, who joins us again, beaming in from India. Farzan, it was really interesting to hear you talk with Alistair Harding yesterday about digital IDs, I think, and India as an example. I think Nigeria was mentioned as well. So that was an interesting chat. And here you are again.
Yeah, making the most of my time helping people might understand what's going on in our world and how to protect themselves best.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so this one jumped off the page this week. Kiwi Bank exposed to the tune of $30 million as lay-by goes under, having failed to find buyer. I thought this whole buy now, pay later thing was like genius and could never fail.
Yeah, we know what the geniuses at finance and big banks think. Everything was easy. They seemed like geniuses when the price of money was close to the floor, down to zero. And now the chickens are coming home to roost, right? If we're being honest, as I mentioned about a year and a half back, this is all going to play out. Even during the global financial crisis, we saw cracks about 12 to 18 months beforehand, and then the big bang happened. This is exactly what's been happening since last year. Even Apple has an Apple Pay Later that they've decided to put it on the ice for now. And they've decided they're not going to go down that avenue. But you're right in this case. They've gone broke. They filed for bankruptcy and liquidation. And one of the New Zealand banks is Kiwi Bank, which is on the hook for $30 million. Well, one of their facilities is supposed to expire this month. So they've obviously decided they might not let it roll over because it's maturing this month, which means they're saying we want the payout. I would just say good luck trying to get people to return their old shoes or handbags and pieces of clothing.
Yeah, you're not going to get much.
You're not going to get much.
Receivers aren't going to do too well out of that, are they?
Well, what are they going to do? Go and claim people's clothing and underwear and shoes and all that kind of stuff?
We want the underwear back. We want the underwear back.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But they're saying, hey, don't worry, we're not going to lend any more money. But people who owe us money, keep making sure you keep paying us the money, yeah. Right? If I'm one of those customers, I'm going, yeah, stuff here. I'm not going to make my last couple of payments. I don't know. But the whole thing is the business model is a fail. This only works when everyone's just dead binging, so to speak, when interest rates were really low.
Yeah.
The organization got cheap funding and it handed out money to people to pay it off over four, five, six installments. The economy slowed down, interest rates have gone up, and yeah, the executives say, oh, we're so sorry that this has happened.
Absolutely sorry, heartbroken. Man. They're saying they're absolutely heartbroken.
Yeah, exactly. They're heartbroken, aren't they? They were making, I don't know what big salaries the executives had, but they're shutting down the New Zealand and the Australian operation, not the UK one yet.
Yeah, I see.
But it tells you what impact it's also going to have on the retail businesses that we're getting easy sales through these lay-by options. They're not going to get the easy sales because clients are going to, or customers are going to have to front up cash or credit, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, the business model is flawed, mate, because you're lending money to people who shouldn't have that money.
He's saying, this is Gary Roloff, who is the CEO. He's saying he attributed the company failure to a longer than expected economic downturn that has had a significant impact on the retail sector in New Zealand and in the UK. Seeing reduced consumer spending, higher credit losses, increased fraudulent activity. Alongside this, increased financing costs created a perfect storm that was difficult to recover from, he said. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great when, let's say, if I'm an executive running such a big organization, if I don't have foresight to see what could be happening, then I don't deserve to be a managing director of such an organization, right? This is the problem we have in today's world is these, even during the global financial crisis, none of the bankers went to jail, if you remember, in the US or anywhere around the world. Unfortunately, we've created an environment where they are allowed to get away with these kind of things. And the poor man, though, has to front up or loses his assets. Being a managing director, if he couldn't see the perfect storm, we've been talking about it on this radio station about the slowdown coming.
I think you actually specifically mentioned this in an earlier chat, like quite a way back, as being vulnerable to exactly this.
Exactly right. So we were talking about this a year back, people could see it as an executive, you stop these kind of laybys and you start making collections happening. But obviously, it's a slide because interest rates are going to keep going up. There's no way of recovering from this. So he can blame increased fraudulent activity and higher credit losses. We know what higher credit losses mean. People who can't afford other basic stuff, because as we've discussed, your mortgage, insurances, everything's gone up. I'd rather skip on this, let them come and take my pair of sneakers. Who cares?
Yeah.
But I have to put food on the table. So it's common sense. You can see this out 12, 18 months. And this is what I've been saying is this year, there's going to be a lot of, in the second half, we're going to have a lot of fun stuff from my perspective. When I say fun stuff, as in when you have the foresight to see what's coming and some of my clients know what's coming, you can be better prepared and get yourself out of the way, which is also what I said last year, towards the end of last year. Just get yourself out of the way, because there's a lot of harm coming people's way, especially people who have a lot of debt.
Obviously, Kiwi Bank were providing a facility to them, $30 million they're on the hook for. They should have seen this coming too, surely.
Yeah, they've possibly seen it quite some time back. I don't know how long the term facility was, but it's saying it's maturing this month, so in June, common sense. So obviously, they must have given them a 6 months heads up, and they couldn't find buyers. Now, why would you buy this business if you know it's nosediving? So they couldn't find buyers because Kiwi Bank wanted their money, and essentially, Kiwi Bank said, enough is enough. We're not going to roll it down. So what does a business do? It files for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Now, what's going to get recovered? Hardly anything, but I don't know what the assets of the business are. I haven't looked at their balance sheet. But let's say Kiwi Bank's going to have to write off this loss as well, which again comes to the New Zealand taxpayer.
Yeah. Okay. And it's a sign of a broader economic slowdown, isn't it? I mean, how many quarters have we had of negative growth now?
We're up to about five, and there's a report coming out later today about the June 2020 quarter. Sorry. But I just wanted to talk about when we say recession, and I mentioned this quite a few times, that New Zealand is in a recession. The technical definition is two quarters of negative growth. Now, I just want to talk people through a bit of a history, but also where we are right now. The last five quarters, out of the last five quarters, we've had four quarters of contraction, only one quarter of expansion in the GDP. So the December 22 quarter was a contraction. Now think March 23 was a contraction. June 23 was the only one with an expansion of only 0.5%. December 23 was a contraction. September 23 was a contraction. September and December 23. So now we're waiting for the March 24 of this year gone. So out of the last five quarters, four quarters have been contraction, and it only takes two quarters of contraction to call it a recession. So yes, New Zealand is in recession. And during the global financial, just to give people some context of where we are, because people still keep thinking, I'm not sure because I'm not on the ground in New Zealand. I've heard about 80% of the people say it's really bad. We're suffering in New Zealand. There's about 20% saying, oh, it's okay. It's okay. We can feel the pressure, but it's not that bad. So to give some context, just during the global financial crisis was the last time New Zealand suffered five consecutive quarters of negative growth. Now, this time, out of the five quarters, we've had four. We do not have five consecutive, but the painful part is coming now. So obviously, later this afternoon, we'll see what happens. If there's another contraction, then we've already had three consecutive and five out of the six. And to give you some context, again, let's go back a little bit longer, because I've dug this number up. Between 1988 and 1990 in New Zealand, we had six out of nine quarters of negative growth. Six out of nine quarters of negative growth. And right now we are four out of five are negative already. And later this afternoon, we're going to find out whether we're negative or positive. And that was during 88 to 90, when in 1991, the New Zealand unemployment rate shot up to 11%.
Gosh, yeah.
Okay, so 10% of the population is literally without a job. And what do we sit at unemployment-wise today is 4.3. The Reserve Bank is very proud of itself because it says, hey, we think we're going to manage to get the unemployment rate up to about 5% by the end of this year. That's what we're aiming for. So they're aiming to get the unemployment rate from 4.3 to 5%. Now, just think about this in numbers, Paul. If we say we have a 5 million population, the Reserve Bank wants 250,000 people in New Zealand to be unemployed.
Already things are looking a bit thin in the streets. I wonder if I'm imagining things or that is actually a physical sign of a contraction. You know, there's, it just feels like there's less activity. And talking about GDP measured over quarters, don't we have a huge rate of immigration? And shouldn't that keep GDP bumped up? But it's not.
It's not. It's not. Exactly. So the exact number, I'm not 100% sure, but it's about 130,000 people, population growth that we've had. That's 2.5%. So if you think about, in spite, and this is they're admitting it. The Reserve Bank is admitting this. The economists of the big banks are admitting it, saying this is worse than the numbers are because we've had 130,000 people coming to the country. So technically, Paul, what we have here is we've got a lot more bodies, but we're producing less. The productivity of the country is going backwards. Plus, we don't have any growth in spite of so many people coming in. Now, can you imagine if these people weren't coming in, we would be literally in a depression, so to speak. Well, maybe not depression, but let's say between a depression and a recession, right? Really bad contraction. Instead of the 0.4s and the 0.5s, we might even be in a 1% contraction, which is the largest we had during the 1990 period. The largest one in there was 1.1. And currently, for the last five quarters, we're sitting at 0.3, 0.4, 0.5. We're not that far off of what happened in the 1990s. So I'm just giving people a view into what we're walking into in the future. And when you said, yes, there is, you know, the streets and you can see it out there, I think we talked about the services index and all that slowing down. Services, I think about a month back, there's this thing called PSI, which is your performance of services index. And that they started measuring that around 2007. And I think about last week or 2 weeks back, they recorded the lowest level since the survey began in 2007. And it was even lower than what during the GFC.
Okay. So it's worse than the GFC, is that your feeling?
Yes. Well, the number was worse than what it was during the global financial crisis. During the global financial crisis, America had the deepest pain that it felt because it was their banking system that was imploding. This time around, their balance sheet's a little bit stronger, even though they had banks collapsing last year and they had a bank collapse this year, and they still have more problem banks. What has happened since then is New Zealand and Australia was a little bit further away from these problems. And because we had net migration happening then, our house prices kept going up and we had housing shortages. The unfortunate thing is in certain parts it's worse than the GFC already. But in certain parts, it's not yet. The pain is yet to come. Because again, even the central bank, Reserve Bank of New Zealand, has clearly said that we're not going to, since last May, they've left the OCR at 5.5. Okay? From May last year to June now, it's 5.5. And they're saying we're not going to look at reducing it till next year. Obviously, there's other reasons to defend the currency and all of that, because Australia also this week did not touch their official cash rate, even though the economy is suffering. Whereas Canada and the ECB, which is the European Central Bank, they both reduced interest rates, so did the Swiss Central Bank. So they can see that if we don't reduce interest rates, our economy is going to suffer immensely, and they've reduced it. Now, if Australia and New Zealand start reducing interest rates, inflation comes back, plus our currency suffers, which adds on to the inflation. So again, we've kind of gotten off topic, but this is what happens. They're caught between a hard rock and a hard place. They're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. But this PSI thing that I was talking about is not, the decline has in the last 3 months has been the sharpest decline. And that's what I'm saying. It's the lowest level since the survey began in 2007. And when you said it's feeling on the streets, I've been reading a lot about the housing market and people obviously aren't feeling confident. They're saying it's a buyer's market. So if you're a buyer, you're just going to sit back and wait for prices to come down.
Yeah.
And I took some notes on the national median house price. And I'll just give you the last 3 months. They say the national median house price in March was about 800K. In April, it was 790K. In May, it's 770K. Okay, so in a matter of space, in a space of 3 months, you've lost 30,000 just on the national median house price. And in Auckland, in the last 3 months, the prices have dropped 4.2%, rest of New Zealand, 2.9%. Now, if you talk about sales also, I've written this down as well, the seasonally adjusted basis, sales were down 4.9%. And in Auckland, the sales were down 11.9% since April last year.
That's a big number.
Yeah. So people aren't buying because they know if interest rates, even they don't even need to go up, if they just stay where they are. And in the last couple of weeks back, we talked about the non-performing loans. Hey, people are in trouble. Let's sit back and wait for the trouble to get worse. And then we might jump in and buy ourselves a house. But unfortunately, this is what's happening in the New Zealand economy, mate. We mentioned quite some time back that people should stay away. And just one last thing, I just turned the page on my book. Your GDP per capita during the GFC, global financial crisis, had a 4.2% decline. In 2022, we had a 4% decline. And ANZ's top economist expects the number later this afternoon to be a 4.3% decline. Now, we're already at 4. GFC was 4.2. And later this afternoon, if it's a 4.3% decline, again, that'll point out that it was bigger than the global financial crisis.
Yeah.
GDP per capita, okay? Which is the one which you said, when population comes in, it's per capita GDP going backwards as much as the GFC. I'll stop at that, mate.
International, this is a bit of a headline here. The music just stopped out of Zero Hedge. Japan banking giant Norin Chukin to liquidate $63 billion in treasuries and European bonds to plug massive unrealized losses. So is this the start? Okay, it's one bank. Is this the start now of the big treasuries and bonds sell-off that we've been talking about?
Yeah, that's correct. The bonds sell-off has already started. When I gave you an example that China was liquidating or also not renewing their U.S. Treasury bonds. Obviously, Russia started this after the GFC. They started liquidating the U.S. Treasury bonds and investing that money more in some of it in European bonds and most of it in gold. They were shoring up their gold held in their country. But now that China is obviously, the one thing I want people to realize, the U.S. debt, as we mentioned before, about $34.8 trillion. We're getting up to the $35 trillion. There's $10 trillion of the U.S. debt maturing this year, mate. And what you got to think is the U.S. debt might have been sold on a five-year term at close to zero or 1%, and now it's sitting at 5.5%. So these are the losses that are accumulating on everyone's books. One of the reasons why your Silicon Valley Bank and those banks collapsed last year was, as I said, there's an inverse ratio out here. So as interest rates go up, bond values start collapsing. USA has $10 trillion in bonds maturing for the rest of 2024. Somebody has to come in and buy $10 trillion. So
who could that be, though?
It was Japan. It was Japan and it was Europe. Okay? And this is what I'm saying. Countries will start realizing what's happening and they're going to start getting out. Now, the US government has a big problem because, again, let's slow down on this. As I said, it's not just selling the new debt. It's also replenishing the old debt. Because when a bond matures, there's a big hole. You have to pay back the investor. But now when you pay that person back, that person was getting 1%. Now when you issue a new bond, you're having to pay them 5 or 5.5%. Well, it's 4 point something in the US. So 4.25. Now, if suddenly $10 trillion is repriced from 1% to 4.5%, can you see the hole you're digging yourself every time? But they have no choice. Yeah. They have no choice. They have to keep offering a higher rate, which means the rates go higher, which means bonds go lower, which means banks' balance sheets start collapsing in on itself. So I come away from that. Obviously, last year, Japanese bank collapsed. We know the U.S. banks have collapsed last year as well because they had U.S. government treasuries on their balance sheet. Now, this Japanese bank, as we mentioned last year as well, they have to realize their unrealized losses at some stage. So this bank has pretty much said, we're going to liquidate $63 billion. This is in U.S. dollars. It's 10 trillion yen, which is about $63 billion in U.S. treasuries and European bonds. Now, it sounds like a very big number in trillions in yen, but it's still quite a big number in U.S. treasuries, $63 billion. And this is the problem that we have. These are unrealized losses. So the bank is now going to take that loss on its balance sheet. Its balance sheet year end is March 2025. And who's going to suffer again? The shareholders. And last year, the forecast was 500 billion yen was going to be their loss by March 2025. By them doing this, the loss is going to be a 1.5 trillion hit to their balance sheet.
Yeah.
Would you invest in this bank shares? I wouldn't.
No.
And this is the problem we have, mate, is globally banks start selling this. Now, if this bank is selling it, there's other Japanese banks who hold these as well. Japanese pension funds will hold it. They'll start selling it. So not only does the U.S. government have a problem with replenishing the $10 trillion in bonds maturing this year, especially after what they've done with Russia and freezing their assets, people are running away from U.S. Debt, the government bonds. And we get to a critical stage where there's going to be a fire sale of these. Because, you know, when we've talked about a fire in a movie theater, if you smell it first, if you see the smoke, you run out first towards the exit. Yeah. Everyone's going to start selling. Everyone's going to start running, taking the exit, and this system implodes on itself. The U.S. dollar is different, though, to the treasury bonds. I just hope people understand that. On the radio, it's difficult to explain, but bonds are different to the U.S. dollar. Sorry to interrupt, Paul.
That's all right. I was going to just move to G7 because that has just very recently wound up. What came out of that that you saw that's worth a mention?
Yeah, we'd mentioned that the G7 countries in Italy would kind of go after Russian assets one of three ways, and they've decided to go after the Russian assets by giving Ukraine money, as we said. I'd said this exact thing. They're going to give them money and use it as a bond and say, hey, we're going to use the Russian assets as collateral and we'll service the debt with the amount they're earning on the Russian assets. So they decided to do that, and they said 90% can go towards the war effort, 10% in rebuilding the country. And I can tell you, mate, Ukraine's a failed state. We might not even have a Ukraine in about 3 to 5 years' time.
Yeah.
Just think about how many men, how many young men has that country lost?
Maybe 500,000. Maybe a million wounded. It's interesting because Zelensky's term has run out, so he's actually technically not even, you know, president and has no...
He's a dictator.
Yeah, political... Yeah, well, to use the strict definition. And the other thing is that Vučić, the Serbian president, has been warning of war in 3 months. And it's interesting that figure you gave, like, what was it, 90% or something for the war effort and 10% to rebuild? That tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have money. They have no money left. U.S. government is broke. U.S. government's been giving hand over fist. As I said, this happened in Roman times. When they know the system's coming to an end, everyone's going to pillage the system. And that's why Ukraine has become a black hole. I think you mentioned New Zealand also has sent a few million and stuff like that. You'd ask Peter.
I think 100 million cumulatively, and no one knows what it's been spent on at all.
No one will ever know. No one will ever know. So this is a black hole. Ukraine politicians were... Ukraine was the one country. I don't know if you remember the Panama Papers. Ukraine was the one country whose politicians had the most amount on there. Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. Even European Union had said that. So obviously Ukraine's a black hole. The money's going in there. It's being swindled. We remember.
Biden's are in there. Of course he's in.
Everything.
And what do you know? The son of the bitch, was fired or whatever. So and that's a quote from Joe Biden. So everyone's had their hands in there. In terms of, you know, using those frozen Russian assets, if I was Russia, I'd be grumpy as hell about that.
Oh, there's, again, last time we spoke about what they will do, I told people a week before it even happened what would happen, and that's exactly what happened. So I'm going to tell you what could happen. Obviously, from a military standpoint, Russia has said this could be an act of war. Russia has been patient. So from that point, they could do something. But this is another thought of the circle that I hang out with. Obviously, if you think about Europe has frozen Russian assets of about, what, $300 billion.
Yeah.
Now, how does Putin retaliate? So there's estimated more Western assets in Russia than the $300 billion. Let's think through this. The likes of your Coca-Cola's and your McDonald's have manufacturing plants. Your British Petroleum and all that stuff has oil rigs and all that stuff. So now just think, if Russia wants to go tit for tat, it can fix all, it can literally kind of not confiscate, but take over and pass on to its companies or nationalize.
It could nationalize
if it wants, or the Gazproms and stuff have lost assets overseas, so Gazprom could be handed over an oil field which belonged to British Petroleum.
Well, I heard Putin say in a news conference that Gazprom had the ability and capacity to take over any other oil business in Russia if it came to
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So that is it. What are you doing? You're just transferring ownership. So they're going to steal our money. We've got more international assets in our country. And these are fixed assets. They're fixed to the ground, right? They're in Russia. So what are they doing? These politicians are doing brain-dead things. As I said, this financial system is collapsing. If they don't have war, they cannot get out of this. So they will just create war by hook or by crook. Now, if Russia goes, okay, you guys have done this. We're going to take your assets. That's one thing. And Europe's not going to be happy. Now, think if you're a business owner, if you're a Coca-Cola or you're a McDonald's, you're not going to be happy, first of all, nor is your BP's. But the other thing also they can do is there's about 200 out of the 300 billion sitting in Euroclear, which is your European exchange. And if anyone read that book that we talked about last year,
yep,
and early on this year as well, The Great Taking, that Euroclear is the biggest clearing for shares and bonds and all of that. Now, Euroclear does have offices around the world, okay, including Hong Kong and the Middle East. Now, Hong Kong, think under China. Russia could sue Euroclear in Hong Kong. A Hong Kong court says, okay, Russia, you're right. Those are your assets. And now you've thrown a big spanner in the works, because in the entire world, there's no rule of law. Let's say if I'm a Kiwi and I have assets in Dubai or Russia or someone, if the government can just strike a piece of paper and say that asset doesn't belong to me anymore, there is no rule of law. Whose assets are whose assets? Just because politicians decide not to do this. So, and this is what I'm saying, when the trust in the system collapses, assets can collapse overnight. So you just need to know what kind of asset types you're in. And this is just one thought process. Now, they can sue them and all that stuff. And we had also talked about the peace summit that was happening and about 80 countries were asked to come and sign. China and Russia didn't attend. But
we sent the corrections minister.
It's a joke, mate. Obviously, Russia and China know what was going on. But there are countries like India, Thailand, the UAE did not sign that documentation. Yeah, that's clearly telling you the world is bifurcating into two parts. There's the Eastern Bloc, which is just saying, you've kind of bullied us long enough. Now we're not going to stand up for this anymore. And they're the ones with all the resources and all the assets. The West is going to learn very quickly. All the Fugazi and the fake money only takes you so far, as people start waking up and realize this is all just financial mouse click stuff, whether it's your bonds or shares in banks or whatever it is, it's all electronic.
Okay, Farzan, great to catch up. We're out of time. And quickly, Farzan, how do people get in touch?
Yeah, please flick me an email, jump on my website, successsimplified.life, and I'll be happy to get back in touch with you if I can help you.
Thank you again for helping us join those money dots. As you say, there's the intensity of everything seems to be just pumping up. It's getting more intense, right?
It is, mate. The next 6 months are going to be really, really interesting, especially with the US elections coming up. And I've also heard Joe Biden won't be running for the next election. So maybe you can discuss that
We can talk about that next week. And maybe we talk about the, what a war could mean economically, a war in Europe. We'll talk again in about a week, all right?
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, mate.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.